Hallo, so schön, dass du da bist, hier beim Podcast Happy, Holy and Confident, deinem Podcast fürs Herz und den Verstand. Mein Name ist Laura Marlina Seiler. Ich freue mich unendlich, dass du hier bist, denn Freunde der Sonne, heute im Podcast zu Gast Matthew McConaughey. Und Matthew McConaughey ist unter anderem Oscar-Gewinner. Ihr werdet ihn alle kennen aus den unterschiedlichsten Filmen wie den Dallas Buyers Club oder Gentleman. Unglaublich toller Schauspieler und auch ein wahnsinnig inspirierender Mensch. Und Matthew McConaughey hat ein Buch geschrieben, Green Lights. Und ich freue mich unglaublich, mit ihm über dieses Buch gesprochen zu haben. Denn es ist ein Buch, wo es sehr viel darum geht, wie wir uns selber durch unser Leben bewegen. Und Green Lights steht dafür, dass es immer mal Momente gibt, da stehen quasi alle Ampeln auf grün für uns. Und es gibt Momente, da stehen sie auf rot oder auf orange. Und die Frage ist, wie gehen wir mit diesen Momenten um, wenn es mal nicht läuft? Und wie kommen wir wieder zu diesen Green Lights zurück? Wie kommen wir wieder in den Flow von unserem eigenen Leben zurück? Und ich habe mit Matthew unter anderem darüber gesprochen, was für ihn Spiritualität bedeutet. Wir haben genau darüber gesprochen, was Momente in seinem Leben waren, wo es mal ein rotes Licht gab, wo es mal nicht weitergegangen ist und wie er in solchen Momenten damit umgeht. Und es ist einfach ein unglaublich inspirierendes, schönes Gespräch und ich hoffe, dass du auch wahnsinnig viel daraus für dich mitnehmen kannst. Das Interview ist logischerweise auf Englisch, weil Matthew McConaughey Amerikaner ist. Du findest aber natürlich wie immer die deutsche Übersetzung in den Untertiteln auf YouTube und auf meinem Blog und kannst natürlich einfach total gerne auch parallel mitlesen. Und ja, ich hoffe, dass du ganz viel aus diesem Gespräch für dich mitnehmen kannst. Das Buch ist jetzt auch auf Deutsch erschienen, Green Lights von Matthew McConaughey. Hol's dir gerne, lies es, lass dich davon inspirieren und ich hoffe, dass du aus diesem Gespräch ganz viel Wertvolles für dich mitnehmen kannst. Und als kleine Side-Info noch für dich, wie gesagt, am 3. Juli feiern wir den großen Happy, Holy and Confident Podcast Geburtstag. Melde dich dafür gerne kostenlos an, schreib dich auf die Gästeliste und dann sei abends dabei bei der Online-Party, auf die ich mich schon riesig freue, 3. Juli. Den Link dazu findest du natürlich auch in den Shownotes. Und falls du es auch noch nicht gesehen hast, es gibt mittlerweile eine App von mir, die Higher Self App, wo du alle meine Meditationen drin findest, wo du Masterclasses drin findest, wo du meine Affirmationen drin hast, wo du alle meine Kurse drin findest und wo du dich wirklich komplett austoben kannst. Das ist so dein kleiner Spiritual Buddy für die Hosentasche. Und wenn du möchtest, hol dir die App, die ist kostenlos. Und genau, gibt es überall, wo es Apps gibt. So, jetzt aber einfach ganz viel Spaß mit dem Gespräch mit Matthew McConaughey. I am so grateful and happy to have Matthew McConaughey on the show today. Thank you so much for your time and being here.
My pleasure to be here on Happy, Holy, and Confident, and you in your wonderful position at 9 months about to help bring a new life into the world. Thanks for spending time with me.
Thank you so much. So, Matthew, the day the podcast publishes, your book is already 2 days here in Germany, and it's called Green Lights. And I already had the honor to read into it, but maybe you can help understand everyone hearing the word green lights.
Right, yes.
What is it about? Like, what was the idea behind giving your book this title?
Well, the title came out of me going through 36 years of journals. And the central theme turned out to be green lights, meaning I've had successes and satisfactions and happiness and joy in my life. And those are green lights. And I, like everyone else, I think really loves those times, appreciates those times. It's like the Autobahn versus the dirt road, you know, going against traffic. We want the Autobahn in life. We like when our life is on the Autobahn, in the left lane, you know, getting after it. But life's not all that. We have yellow lights and we have red lights. We don't like those. We don't want them when we're in them. Their resistance, their discomfort, their interruptions, their hardship, crisis, sickness, death. We don't feel good. We don't want them. But in going through all of my journals, I started to notice that, oh, every one of the red and yellow lights I had in my life, though I didn't want them at the time, I've now realized that I needed them. Mm-hmm. There were green light assets within the red light and yellow lights. There were lessons for me to learn in each one of my hardships, or where at the time I thought, oh no, this couldn't be any worse. There was a lesson to learn. There was a green light asset in the red and yellow. So I believe, and part of the theory that I'm sharing here is that why I call it green lights is, you know, all the red and yellow lights eventually turn green in the rear view mirror. Some we notice at the time when we're in the hardship. Sometimes we can notice when we're in it. We're like, oh, there's value in this. I just believe there's value in this sacrifice or whatever, this penance or whatever I'm going through, this hardship I'm going through right now. Sometimes we don't notice till a year from now, 2 years, 10 years after the event. Sometimes I don't think we're going to notice until we're on our deathbed. And sometimes I still don't think we'll notice. I think it may be our great, 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 great grandkids that realize the green light asset of some hardship that we had in our life right now. Mm-hmm. But I do believe that in the rearview mirror, they all do turn green, the yellow and reds.
Mm. So we all have sort of inner dialogues. We all talk to ourselves in our heads. And I wonder, what has been one of the latest, let's say, red lights in your life? And what is the inner dialogue you have in moments like that? If we could deep dive into your thoughts, how do you talk to yourself? What is a way how you maybe get yourself out of this red light?
Yeah. That's a good question. I mean, I'm pulling up something because I'm writing to myself all the time. And still keeping my journal. I just keep it on a phone now. Well, I wrote this down to myself the other day because I'm going through this right now about making sure that I'm leaning into engaging with uncomfortability enough. You know, I'm a fan of the value of stress. Mm. I am a fan of helping decrease stress in our lives, but I'm also a fan of, well, if you have stress, it means you give a damn. It means you're trying to take responsibility for some things in your life. Mm. And that's not always easy. That's not always a green light. That comes with red and yellow. You know, you have a child. It's all a green light if you're just saying yes to everything. Not in the long term, it's not. But to say no, to give our children certain yellow and red lights, takes a whole lot more effort and a lot more work and responsibility from us as parents and more time. So it's not the easiest way. So I'm always trying to ask myself, am I leaning into the right types of discomfort in my life, the right types of resistance? I'm entering a new phase in my life right now. We've been this last year trying to not bump into COVID, trying to keep my mother safe, who's 89. She has susceptible lungs. You know, my life, like everyone's, has been some sort of limbo. The floor has been shook in the world. At least it's been awkward for everyone. So I have a similar gap that I think a lot of people do right now is, okay, now that it seems like we're coming out of this as a consensus, like we see the light at the end of the tunnel here. How's the world going to change? How am I changing in it? How much is my day-to-day business life going to change? How much is this how you and I are going to meet for any time we meet in the rest of our lives? And then I'm also trying to say, instead of saying, oh, I can't wait till this is over and we can go freely engage with each other personally again, I'm also trying to say, wait, before you say that, let's lean into what's the advantages of this time. What are the assets of this time where we've all been forced to do some sort of inventory, where we've all been forced to be uncomfortable, where we've been forced to stick with ourselves and have the more inner dialogue probably than we're used to having? And look, I know as well as everybody that company we keep ain't always easy. I you know, I I'm in a pretty good relationship with myself right now. I've got some challenges, and I've got a lot of blind spots of where I'm going, and I need to figure. I'm in a spot in my life where I understand the why of what I want to do going forward, but I got to figure out the how. I'm also in a time in my life where I've got too many things on my proverbial desk that I need to do. And I tell the story in the book about I had five things and I eliminated two and I got better at the three that I left myself to. I've got some house cleaning to do. I've got to trim the mullet, so to speak. I've got to clean some things up to go, here's my clear lanes of where I'm going. Because right now I'm a little too sporadic. I got a lot of ideas. I'm in the ideating mode. I've got so many ideas. And you know how that saying, a man or a person addicted to ideas needs some starvation. Well, a person addicted to truths need to be fed. So I'm disseminating. Which stuff do I have right now? It's just ideas, and which ones are truths? Hopefully I got a lot that's leaning on the truth side. And then look, what goes through my head when I do get and that dialogue in my head's not going well, or I'm going down a slippery slope to where I'm maybe not being kind enough to myself, or maybe I'm not being ambitious enough with myself, or I'm not being kind enough to others. I back up and I try to remind myself that, hey, time is on our side. Don't be against time. Be on time. Don't be ahead of time. Don't be behind time. Beyond time. It's on our side. Once we realize that, yeah, we are going to die one day, this life is impermanent, once we shake hands with that inevitability, all of a sudden time does slow down and go, 60 seconds is a minute. 60 minutes is an hour. 24 hours is a day. That's on time. That's what we get. And so I try to slow down and remember that time's on my side. And then I also, when I have a reminder of three children, that bases me out every time. And if I'm a little scatterbrained, I go spend time with them or think about the quality of their life, and you cannot go wrong.
Thank you for sharing. You said that you're right now in a pretty good place in the relationship with yourself. And once you said that a person you always chase is your 10-year older self. And I was wondering, how do you find balance between getting better and improving yourself and chasing that man? And on the other hand, appreciating who you are now, what you are achieved already, and to find this calmness and peace and ease within yourself without always having this feeling of, you know, running like a rabbit behind something you anyways can't like keep, sort of.
100%. I hear you, because I'm not always in that place. I know exactly what you're talking about. I can get caught up in the chase and miss yourself
in the moment. Yeah.
And if you, let's go backwards in time, which is, we can do this sometimes. I don't usually do this, but I know a lot of people do. You can be so hung up on the past that you miss the present as well, because you're just dwelling on the past. So what's that balance for me? For me, it's not like, be present now first. For me, it's if I have something to look forward to, and I'm sound with what that is I'm looking forward to, at the same time, I am sound with where I've been. If I'm connected to my past and where I want to go, then I find that I'm much more present. So it's almost like that state of Zen, or that state of presence for me, is when it's in between the two. When I'm balanced with where I've been and where I want to go, that's when I'm most present.
I'm not as
good at being present when I'm like, just be present. Well, yeah. Wait a minute. If I'm anticipating, well, I've got to have something to look forward to. I want to have a little fortune telling of what my future entails, or where I want to go. And again, that would be the side that I lean into sometimes too much, where I need accomplishment to feel significance. Where I need that immediate, you know, where I have trouble maybe you know, relaxing on a vacation when maybe I should. And 3 days into it, I'm already like, I gotta build something. I gotta accomplish something. My wife's like, hey, you've been working straight for 6 months, 6 days a week. Relax, you know. So I can lean into that sometimes too much. Sometimes I get caught in the one you're talking about, looking forward too much, living in the future too much, where I'm missing here. And I try to remind myself this a line that came to me 20 years ago. I don't know if I stole it or read it or wrote it or what, but I was like, a day at a time with the big picture in mind, like one step at a time with the big picture in mind. I don't know how to take one step at a time unless I have an idea of what the big picture in mind is.
Yeah.
And so, but at the same time, writing this book was a real exercise in looking and getting reconnected to my past, which I am a bit allergic to. I'm like, I don't even watch the movies. I like making my movies more than I like watching them. I don't like to go back and have a look. Was it okay? Cool. Okay. Check it out. I'm not looking. You know what I mean? And I was forced to go back and look and sit with myself and who I've been. And that was kind of daunting, you know? So, but it reconnected me a lot with my past and gave me a lot of significance, gave me a lot of confidence with like, oh, you know what? I see now that I've looked them over my last 50 years. I've connected the dots of how I got right here. And you know what? Good on you, McConaughey. All right. Nice path. Nice journey so far. So I gave it a little credence and was able to laugh at all my missteps.
It's nice. Yeah, thank you. There's one sentence in your book that I really liked and that resonated a lot with me. So in the chapter where you write about frequency, you write, our souls are infinitely magnetic. Can you dive a little bit deeper into this sentence? Because yeah. I think it's such a fundamental thought that if you really grasp it, it can help you so much through life. So how do you mean it? Or how did you mean it when you wrote it?
Well, I mean, I think in a couple of ways. So one, we know we can all practice it. You go out and what we give, if we give the voice of our soul to someone, let's say in an interpersonal relationship, it spurs a like response from their soul. They maybe didn't have that. They were not maybe not coming with that intention. Maybe they were coming with less trust. But if you give a trust out of your soul and you give an energy to someone, it can wake up that same thing in them. And they're like, oh, great. And they can give it back. And all of a sudden you get that beautiful reciprocity of that magnetism I'm talking about. So we can spur like responses from other souls by this, what we give from ours, and to the bad. Think about it. We can come in, if we're coming in with a lower baseline and an uglier response coming out of our soul, we're not looking at the high eye. We're not trying to see the affirmation. We're looking at the confrontation. We're looking at what the problem is. Where's the disease? Don't show me the health. What's the problem? Let me find out what I don't like about you. We're giving that. That's going to create a similar response from you to me. So that multiplication is not the math we want to do, I don't believe. Now, the other side of that is the second point on that line of our souls of being infinitely magnetic is, I think that comes in a chapter or a part of my book that says the target draws the arrow. And especially with, I mean, I think it happens with work, but especially with the heart and love in the world. It's like, it's not about necessarily go and find it. If we sit like the spider in our web, our prey, our food, our meat will come. And again, I think that's a huge art of living lies right there. Yes, we want to have those things that we see a goal we want to go get, but we have to keep that balance with sometimes we need to sit back, be most ourselves, not feel like we have to intrude or obsess or objectify or gather to bring in. No, sit still and look at what's Look at what you start to bring to you. And pay attention. When we're feeling like our most true selves, boy, it's so good to pay attention. What are we drawing at us? What is being magnetized? What's coming to us? I would even say that. I've seen proof of that even in my work. I think it's obvious with language with love. And I talk about it in my book, and I think everyone can have a story about that with love. For me, I found the woman for me when I quit looking for her. She came. You know, but even with work, when I'm like in a good spot in my life, the scripts that come to me, I'm like, are they reading my mail? That's where I am, you know? And I'm like, there's no coincidence to that. It's coming to me for a reason. So that's two examples of what I mean by the magnetic souls.
It's beautiful. Thank you for sharing. There's one thing you said before that resonated a lot with me. You said that for a long time, like, you didn't really know why you were doing things. And now you know exactly why you do things. And it's more about how to figure out how to do them. So it's just interesting because I just figured out some things in my life where I recognized why I do them. And I was like, why? I really felt that it's not right that I do it that way. It's the wrong why for me to pursue. And it has been very difficult for me to acknowledge that because sometimes we do then things out of a lack, for example. So has there been a why you did pursue in your life where you also, when you look back or now reflecting on it, where you say like, well, that was not the the best why, maybe I went for it.
Well, let me think of examples. I'm not very good at remembering exact examples, but I've run fool's errands in my life. I have chased down paper tigers, mirages, that when I got there, I'm like, what were you doing? Because for me, I still have a large part of me. And this is also has helped me with a lot of things that I have succeeded and gotten that are like, yes, that's what I wanted. But I have a large part of me that just really likes to pull things off, see if I can do it, see if I can pull it off. Can I pull off the hustle? Can I pull off the hat trick? Can I walk the tightrope and get out the other side? Can I kiss the fire and walk away? Whistling. I like to see if I can pull stuff off. Now, less so now in my life than maybe when I was young with no family and children and didn't have built what I've built now. But again, we were talking offline before we even got started. I'm still trying to make sure I'm leaning into the discomfort and the uncomfortable things enough in a time in my life when I'm very affluent, when I don't have to work today to pay my rent tomorrow, when my pantry is full, when my kids are doing good and they're healthy and my wife and I are doing good. Enjoy, I'm trying to respect this time, but also go, don't get too comfortable. Don't get complacent. You know, I write in that it was a line I have in the book about when you can, ask yourself if you want to before you do. And I, like many of us, I have chased a lot of whys, chased a lot of because I could, because I can. Let's go find out. And a lot of those have been like, there was no pot of gold or Vinny Spirit, anything at the end of the tunnel, at the end of the rainbow of worth. It was like, oh, okay. Well, what did I get out of that? I don't know. Broke a sweat. I mean, but there was no reward at the end of it. So... I've chased ghosts and chased rewards that when I got there were not what at all I thought they would be. I don't have specific examples for you. And I also, you know, I don't judge myself as being wrong for doing those things, because you can read a book and it can say that, hey, don't chase things, you know, down that don't have the real reward for. You can read that in a line, but when do we really remember it? When do we really learn the lesson?
When we do it
ourselves and we get there and we're like, oh, it's not what I thought. Now you remember. You know what I mean? You're not going to remember if I tell you to remember or you tell me to remember. We remember when we go, I tried it. It didn't work.
I failed it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's so true. So true. So, I mean, you're most of the time an actor, and you decided on a certain point in your life to write a book based on your journals, on everything you lived so far. Going back also to this inner dialogue, because I think this is really interesting, and I know many people listening are in a point of their life where they also have a dream. They want to do something maybe that they haven't done ever before. So have you had doubts of being able to write that book? Have you been like, oh, and let's go back to that inner voice, to that inner dialogue. So how do you talk yourself out of that? How did you do it that you actually wrote it?
Well, I wrote myself out of it.
Oh, perfect.
For instance, when I went away, well, I had doubts for years. For 15 years, I've been telling myself, I always travel with this big treasure chest full of all my journals. And I travel with them because I'm like, I know, told myself 15 years ago, there's a book in there. And when I'm confident, I'm like, yes, and I'm going to go write it. And then all of a sudden, a little time goes by and I get less confident and I look at that big treasure chest of diaries and journals and I'm like, no, you know what? When I die, maybe Camilla or someone else will look in there. And if there's something worth sharing, they can do it. And that was my cop out. And so then when I took them away to finally get the courage to go see what was in them, with the help of my wife, Camilla, by the way, who gave me a kick in the butt and said, you know what you got to do? Get out of here. Don't come back until you got something. Thank you, Camilla. I went into opening the diaries. And again, I got ahead of time. I started to anticipate, what do I think is in here? What do I think my diaries, what I think would be a book based on what I've learned in my journals and what I've written down. And I thought it was going to be very academic. And part of me, I noticed after about 4 days of going through it, what I was reading was not matching up with what I was anticipating or thinking I should. I was foreshadowing what I thought was in there, and I'm going to turn this into something. And that's what I noticed after 4 days. I was like, this doesn't feel academic to me. And then I noticed that maybe part of that was my own pride, thinking I wanted to maybe be more academic, or that was a void that maybe I wanted to fill. And then all of a sudden I remember stopping on night four. I was like, look, you're pressing, you're trying to mold this into something that it's not really telling you what it is. And I remember backing up, going and mixing myself a drink and sitting back and going, start from scratch again. Let's go back to page one and let what you've been writing about for 36 years, things that woke you up in the middle of the night, things that turned you on, lit your fire, things that were on a beer coaster, a napkin that you wrote on your arm and later took a picture of your arm to put in journals, all these things, let them tell you what this book is. There's a bit of that back up and let it land. And then all of a sudden it came out. I was like, wow, this is much more philosophical than I thought. It's much more poetic than I thought. Wow, some of these stories are wild and wonderful. And I laughed while I was crying at the same time of reading them. And oh, I remember that moment. And I remember that day. And oh, how I saw that when I was 8 years old. What I felt about it then is much different than how I feel about it now. Now that I have more knowledge and clarity. So, but write about it like the 8-year-old. Trust. Don't make it too good. Don't make a lesson out. Just tell the truth of the story. So the more subjective I got, the more it was like, just who have you been? What do you got? Write it down. Go. Don't try to make it into anything. Let it become itself. All of a sudden it started to take off. That's what I said. I wrote myself out of it. Then all of a sudden, my biggest challenge in writing the book was ever getting any sleep. I was averaging 17-hour days and would have to force myself to go lay down and take a little bit of a nap because my mind was on fire. And I didn't need much sleep. It was just constant writing, and it just started to flow. Once I let it tell me what it was, it just boom, went.
Beautiful. Amazing. Thank you for sharing. Because I think it's always this difficulty of being an artist to deal with your own fears once you start a new project. And then once you get started into it, you're unstoppable and it just gets out when you find your truth in it. So thank you for sharing. There's something you also said, which I also really like, is you said it's a scientific fact that gratitude reciprocates. How did I
reciprocate?
Reciprocates, yeah. So, I mean, for me, gratitude as well is one of the most life-changing things I have in my life. Do you live actively by that, or like with your children in your family? How do you live a grateful life day by day?
Well, we do practice it. And look, do my children at 12, 11, and 8, is it inherent in their habit? Is it habitual in their being yet? No, not completely. But Camilla and I are, it's one of our non-negotiable things. You know, I was raised where you start off with gratitude that the sun rose again. And give that sincere thanks, because that was never your guarantee, and don't ever take that for granted. It was ingrained in me growing up to where if I really thought I needed a new pair of tennis shoes because I only had one pair and they were kind of ragged and we couldn't afford them, my mom would say, quit asking for new shoes. I'm going to introduce you to the kid with no feet. So my mom was very good at it as a queen of relativity, of giving you a baseline of what you've got to be thankful for. Well, now here I'm a parent. Camille and I have more of an affluent life than my parents did. My kids are born into, they have more than one pair of shoes. You know, they have more than two pairs of shoes. We go places, people fly us places, studios fly, you know, we have a nice house. Our pantry is full. We get to travel. We're doing our best to try and make sure that they never take these simple things for granted. That, not to be ashamed of what we have. I want them to look at in the eye of what we have. Yes, we have a nice home. Always never get sheepish about that. Your mom and father, your mother and father have earned that. We've worked hard to get that. We were able to supply something to the world that the world demanded to an extent that helped us get that. And we've been the best people we could be along the way. We haven't screwed people over and burned bridges to get here. So we talk to them a lot about character, about work ethic, about what it took to get the goods. And ways you don't want to, because there are many ways in the world to get what we have and more by lying and cheating and stealing. But you won't sleep good at night if you do it that way. You'll be a paper tiger. You'll be false. You won't like who you are. And that's what's most important. So we try to teach them that. And that starts with the gratitude. Now, I think I'm working on a theory now of tracking these four things. I believe generosity breeds gratitude. I mean, the more we're generous, you're being generous with me, I'm thankful for that. I'm being generous with you, you're thankful for that. I'm even thankful that I'm being generous with you, and you're thankful that you're being generous with me. So now we both have more gratitude. Now, in our gratitude, if our gratitude level has raised, now, we've already established more responsibility for ourselves. Because, for instance, this talk we're having, we're taking more responsibility for this. I'm getting generosity from you. You're getting generosity from me. I'm thankful for that. You're thankful for this. This matters. I give a damn about this. I'm starting to care more about you. I'm starting to care more about this conversation. I want this to go well. I want it to be true. I'm giving more value to this. My trust level's even rising. So the more value we're given to a situation, that's taking responsibility. And I believe that responsibility breeds freedom. So when I tracking this through life in many ways right now, and it's so far it's proven to be true. Generosity breeds gratitude. Gratitude breeds responsibility. Responsibility breeds freedom. And the last part is where people may argue with me and go, wait a minute, how's responsibility breed freedom? Freedom is when you can do whatever you want to do. Well, no, that's not true freedom. The responsibility is what gives our freedom structure, what makes our freedom art, what makes our life's art. If we're saying yes, it's like I was saying earlier with the green lights. If life was nothing but green lights, that's not true freedom. That's where you just drive around as fast as you can until you run out of gas. There's no evolution in that. You need the reds and the yellows to give life some structure. You need gravity. You need resistance. You need things you value, things you'll stand for, things you'll stand against, that you move out into the world and you go, no, I'm more free because I know what I value. I know what I'm responsible for. Well, now we have discernation. Now we have judgment. Now we have perspective. Now we have ways that we see the world that shape our futures. And that is what I would call true freedom.
That's powerful. Looking forward to your next book. So I read one thing you said, and I really like that because I think it's a topic where we in general don't talk about enough. So there has been a scene in the Dallas Buyers Club movie, and correct me if I'm wrong, but this is what I read. And there has been a scene where you had to say, I die. And you couldn't like say it, and you had to film it again and again because you got aware of your own mortality in that moment so much that it was so difficult for you to play it. Do you remember that, saying that? Is it correct that there has been a moment like this?
I think what the moment you're describing is Ron Woodruff, and that's another, it was a choice I made via as an actor as well. There's a difference in saying I'm doing whatever I can to stay alive and saying I'm trying not to die. You know what I mean? There's just one is the first one is I'm doing everything I can. I'm doing everything I can to live is affirmative. It's a verb. It's forward moving. It's struggle. It's alive. It's a verb. I'm trying not to die is more of a regressive, defensive stance. I'm trying to hold the fort here. I'm trying to just not let I'm trying to hang on to the rope as long as I can. It's different than going, I'm doing everything I can to stay alive. Which then that's scrappy. You're hustling. You're looking alive, going everywhere, four-dimensional. Where's it coming from? I'm going for anything. The fangs get longer and the blood really starts flowing. So I think that's what you're bringing up is I was, Ron Woodruff was a character who was unable to say that word. I'm going to die. That means the end of something. That means the end of it for him. And so it couldn't, that struggle of not being able to was where a lot of the pain and the life force came from me through that character. And I, you know, I chose to make that, put that on myself because that's how I look at life. And that's what I mean by just keep living. You know, I talked to my mom the other night. She's 89. She's doing wonderful. Health's great. Memory's great. And I was with somebody and they asked her, like, well, what what do you think about death? She goes, well, I don't. And they're like, what do you mean? She goes, I can't imagine not being alive.
It's so amazing.
And that is very almost poetic. It's just, it's they're saying similar things, but they're not the same way of looking at it. And she means that. She can't imagine not being alive. You know, my friend Dan Buettner, who works with Blue Zones and studied these centurions around the world, where people live the longest. The the one line that they that he got out of all of the people that live the longest is not that they're trying to live longer. They all just forgot to die.
And they're just in love with life.
Yeah. And going about their day, they're not people that are working every day to go, what can I do to live longer? They're just going like, no, I'm living my life. I'm not even thought about that. I can't imagine not being here. I'm not even thinking about dying.
Nice.
But I think that's a little bit of what that moment you were talking about with Ron Woodruff was coming from.
Thank you for sharing. So in the podcast, it's a big theme around spirituality. And I just try to give different perspectives on and definitions on spirituality. So what would be your definition on spirituality?
Okay. I'm going to say this to you, and you may go, and you may have some listeners go, what? But give me a minute, and I'll state my case. I think I believe all spirituality is religious. Mm-hmm. Religion. The Latin root, and I'm a prescriptive guy. I love to go back to the roots of words. The root, what religion means, it comes from the Latin root legare, L-E-G-A-R-E, which means to bind together. Re means again. So religion actually means to bind together again, which is what I hear a common denominator of everyone spiritual I have crossed. Now, mankind, personkind, womankind has bastardized the meaning of religion through time. We've corporatized it. We've made it inclusive for exclusivity's sake. It has become a club. It has been set up with walls to keep people out. It has been for making money. We've seen liars, cheaters come up in the name of religion and pick our pockets. That's not religion's fault. That's our fault. So I understand when people go, no, I'm not religious, I'm spiritual. Well, okay, in the modern age of what religion has become in many ways, I understand what you're saying, but let's give the root word a chance. Because religion is beautiful. And I think that everybody I talk to, that spiritual people I've crossed, are actually quite religious. It's just a word. And I'm all for like, let's take some words back. Let's take them back and go, no. I'm not letting you, society, over this however many hundreds of years, I'm not letting you steal what that word really means because of your actions, because of our selfishness. No. And so I think all of it's religion.
Thank you. Thank you for this thought. I would think about it. It's good. It's interesting. Thank you.
We hijacked it. Mankind hijacked it and bastardized the word. Shame on us, not shame on the word.
Yeah. What do you believe in?
I believe that God loves a trier. I believe that God loves a self-determining individual. I believe that at the same time, it's all been written. But where fate and self-determination go hand in hand, I think they're right next to each other in going through life. I believe as far as religious, I'm an optimistic mystic. I believe there's many different paths. I've done too much traveling. I've heard too many similar words from the Quran or from the Bible or in Hindu that I'm like, oh, we're saying the same things. Why are these so separate? I believe that we are, humans are innately good, that if we that we want to be good to ourselves and true to ourselves and others. I also believe that at the same time, we need to give more credit to the evil that mankind can possess. I don't think we give it enough credit sometimes. I think we don't want to look or not believe it. I believe that the way forward is not through saying, hey, we are all the same. I believe the way forward is saying, hey, we're all different. We're born with different innate abilities. And therein lies the beauty. I do not believe when people preach tolerance. I do believe when people say, when we say, hey, have the courage enough to accept. Tolerance is a bit of a regressive word, like, okay, I'll tolerate you. It's almost condescending to me. Oh, I'll accept your difference. I believe in a common denominator of values amongst us, that whatever your religion, spirituality, politics is, there's a place where we can agree and have an expectation, a civil expectation between us. I hope there's life after this. I don't know. I believe science is the practical pursuit of God. I believe God loves a scientist. And is saying bravo every time we prove another little thing. I believe that there is most likely an uncaused cause. What's the uncaused cause? If you believe in the Big Bang or whatever, what's the uncaused cause? At the same time, I see evolution. I believe in evolution. I see it. I think that tracks very clearly. And I believe that the more we get to know ourselves, that there's nobody better to investigate. And sometimes you go, if you want to seek God, seek yourself. My friend Penny Allen says it. Boy, if you got God, you got a friend, and that friend is you. You know, it doesn't have to be an outer thing that we're trying to always reach. That's ungraspable. I mean, a lot of times it's kind of how are these aligned? Am I aligned here? When these two are speaking, when these two have a green light, the mind and the heart, the spirit, when these two have an auto bond between them, that's when we're getting the direct line from the prime mover, the wave maker. That's when we're the most spiritual, the most religious, the most connected to whatever you want to call it.
That's a beautiful picture. Yeah, the Audubon.
Right.
So one last question. What I found like a common theme in your book is that I had the feeling that what you did in your life is that you apparently, how I understood it, you, in very few moments, you really go into a victim mode. You're very good into getting back into this creator mode, in this, what you just said, right? To be in this, okay, maybe God is something inside of me, what I can create, and I'm here to create something. So what I feel on the other hand is that we are in a time where many people are a lot into this victim mode, and they don't really find a way out of it. They feel powerless because of all the things happening around us. So How can someone who maybe feels like a victim right now feel more empowered, feel more reconnected to their own power?
Yeah. Well, let me start with sort of this is good defense, because explaining the offense, meaning like explaining like, well, how to feel empowered while feeling the victim, is harder than, let me just give a way that I've noticed that we can deal with it. And one of them you just said. The whole world, to some extent, is feeling victimized right now. Well, when I'm feeling victimized, and when most of us individually are feeling victimized in our own personal and particular way, we tend to think that we're the only ones that feel that way. We tend to feel like the world is revolving around us. No one has my problems. No one has my confusion. No one has my frustration. No one is lost like me. And that helps into the victimhood. All of a sudden you find yourself, all those things are putting more weight on my head and heart. And I'm now feeling getting penetrated down into the dwellings, the basement of a red light. And we can become addicted to that. Well, more. What else? Oh, woe be me. Everything. And all of a sudden, when we become addicted to that, we become blind to actually when green lights are showing up, when opportunities to come out of the victim mode are showing up. But we're down and we're there and we're going to dwell in it. We're going to lay in the victimhood. We're going to lay in the pool of victimhood. And we have a lot of company. Oh, look else who's here. Oh, you're too good. We're an army down here. Let's stake our flag. Let's stake our claim down here. No. Hang on. But I can't get up. It's too heavy a weight. One, remember that everyone else usually has something they say, hey, me too. I feel that way too. That takes the pressure off of us a little bit. Lets it know it's a human challenge that a lot of people are going through. That can take the pressure off. But two, when we want to get up off the mat of victimhood, it looks like it's too much of a mountain to climb. Well, don't worry about climbing a mountain. Part of climbing the mountain and getting out of the feeling like a victim is just, if it's got you down on the ground, just get up to your knees. Then tomorrow, maybe just get up to one leg. Then the next day, maybe get up to 2 feet, have something to hang on to. Then the next step, clear your eyes. Maybe that's all you need to do for the day. Just hang on a second. I'm one small step. Don't worry about how hard it is to be at it. One little small step at a time in that direction. And we start our way out. But the problem is that we feel like it's just too, the weight's too much. I'll never do it. Well, don't think about that, how far it is to get to where I need to go to not be a victim. Just small little increments. If we can just get up off the mat. And then if we can get to the point where we can tie our proverbial shoes and get out the door, boy, that's a biggie. So much of what we do that is hard in life, the hardest part was tying our damn shoes and getting out the door and saying, I'm going to go try it. I'm going to do it. And then after we do it, we're like, what was the hardest part? I mean, you look at it, I always say this with people with exercise. The hardest part about exercise is tying your damn shoes and getting out the door and saying, well, once you go on your run or your meditation or to the gym or to row the boat or whatever, once you're doing that, you're like, oh, that was easy. The hardest part was actually when I said, I'm going to go do this. And I was like, nah, I don't feel like it. And you were like, no, just tie your shoes. It's the hardest part, tying your shoes. And so don't think about what the actual task will be or how far you got to go. Just get up. If you can get up to your knees, then you can get up to 2 legs. If you can stand up and hold the table, or maybe somebody next to you can help you hold up and you can then put on some shoes in time and get out the door. One a day. One little move a day. Just don't drop out of the race. Don't drop out of the race. There's too much beauty, even if you're blind to it right now and the world's black to you. There's too much out there for us not to take advantage of. There's too much beauty. Life's got too many things to offer. And I do believe, when I said earlier, God loves a trier, whether it's God or whatever you believe in, that those increment movements to get up off the mat and get out, there's a little magic that happens where little opportunities show up that you're like, way, where'd that favor come from? But they don't come if we don't continually put in a little bit of that, just that little bit of effort each day to make one more small move to get up ourselves, ourselves. That's on us. We can get help along the way, and yes, we all need help along the way. And we can put up a hand, and people can help us off that mat. But don't rely on that. We need that, but we cannot rely on that. But we'll get more of that from others if we do as much as we can for ourselves, just a little bit each day.
Thank you. Well, Matthew, I really appreciate that conversation so much. And for everyone who wants to dig deeper into it, I mean, your book is available now in German. Unfortunately, I don't have a copy yet because it's not printed yet, but maybe you have one.
That's me on the cover, and that's okay. But the really cool part of the book is what's on the hardcover.
Amazing. Perfect.
That's green light. So that's the metaphor. That's nice. Where I mean all the reds and yellows eventually turn green. That's
what awesome.
That's what we can all
thank you so much for showing it. I'm really sorry there is no
it's coming.
And I really just want to acknowledge you because I think it's so beautiful to see that you have everything that we as a society maybe think that is what success looks like. But I think that you prove kind of what success really looks like because you stayed so humble and so real and raw in a so certain way that is very, very nice to see. And I just want to appreciate that you are so open and that you share so much. So thank you very, very, very much for that conversation.
Well, thank you. I quite enjoyed it. And good luck with the birth of your next child. Bravo.
Thank you so much. All right. Thank you. Take care all the best.
Okay,
thank you.
Ich hoffe, dass du gerade ganz beseelt und inspiriert aus diesem Gespräch rausgehst und freue mich natürlich wie immer darauf, wenn du bei Instagram vorbeischaust, @LauraMarlinaSeiler, mir deine Gedanken zu der Folge dalässt. Was hast du vielleicht für dich mitgenommen? Was ist ein Gedanke, der dich inspiriert, eine Erkenntnis? Was möchtest du gerne teilen? Welche Frage hast du vielleicht auch? Und ich freue mich, von dir zu lesen, mich mit dir auszutauschen und schicke dir jetzt eine riesengroße Umarmung. Wenn du magst, trag dich ein auf die Gästeliste für den Podcast Geburtstag am 3. Juli. Du kannst kostenlos dabei sein, es wird eine wunderschöne Party. Wenn du möchtest, hol dir die Higher Self App, deinen kleinen Spiritual Buddy für die Hosentasche. Und richtig cool ist, dass wir im April im Higher Self Home, das ist mein monatlicher Mitgliederbereich, ein fantastisches Thema haben, nämlich Feng Shui Power. Und wenn du gerade so ein bisschen das Gefühl hast, du würdest gerne ausmisten und würdest gerne mal so einen energetischen Frühjahrsputz machen, sowohl im Innen als auch im Außen, dann schau auf jeden Fall im Higher Self Home vorbei in diesem Monat, denn wir haben zwei fantastische Expertinnen zu dem Thema, die dazu ihren Input geben werden und es ist wirklich sehr, sehr cool. Also super schönes Thema, Feng Shui Power im Higher Self Home in diesem Monat. Den Link findest du natürlich auch in den Shownotes. Und ich schicke dir jetzt einfach eine riesengroße Umarmung. Ich hoffe, es geht dir gut und denk immer daran, dass du das Universum in dir trägst. Du bist ein Ausdruck von diesem Universum. Alles ist in dir. Du bist so viel powervoller, so viel machtvoller, als du im Ansatz wahrscheinlich nur verstehen kannst. Und du wirst immer mehr und immer mehr in Kontakt kommen mit dieser Liebe in dir, mit dieser Schöpferkraft in dir, wenn du dir erlaubst, dein Leben wirklich wahrhaftig zu leben. All in. Es ist so schön, dass es dich gibt. Rock on und Namaste, deine Laura.